This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon. It's cold and it's wet and there's three things you should be doing: drinking wine, drinking gin, or eating good food. We're going to talk about all three of them. Stick with me. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock on a very nasty Saturday. Go the Kickers. Yes, we are talking cravings. Good afternoon. It's almost 7 minutes past one here on the gayest station in the nation, Joy 94.9. Thank you, Maddie T, for running slightly over time with the news. Very kind of you. You can have 7 seconds of my program any day because you're so good at what you do. Thank you also to the team at Techno Gaze and the folks from Saturday Magazine who brought us, brought us all together this lovely Saturday. It's an awful day outside, so I'm assuming you're home in your Ugg boots, track pants, and... It's gays and lesbians. I assume you're dressed fabulously and on your way to IKEA on this gloomy Saturday afternoon, looking for some meatballs or some flat pack of furniture. We have a very big program and I've got three fellows in the studio, all of whom I actually like, so this is going to be good fun. From the Estelle and now St. Crispin at 300 Smith Street in Collingwood is our old mate Scotty Pickett, who we haven't spoken to, I reckon, for about 12 months, Scott.
Yeah, been about 12 months, Pete. How are you going?
I'm very well. I've lost my blue and white scarf. I'm very good.
No, it's sitting over there. I can see it. That's yes. All right. That's
it will
all right.
It will not be out of my eyesight. From the West Winds Gym, we've spoken to him before on the phone. I am a fan of this gin and I'm being unashamed in my... my praise for it, but it is it's very good stuff and it's very relevant to be drinking at this time of the year. Jeremy Spencer from the West Winds Gin, how are you?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm well. Rugged up, but well.
Rugged up. Did you come in on a push bike?
Motorcycle, temporary Australian.
Oh, well, it's just a powered motorcycle. And from the Weekly Review and one of the judges of the Federation Square Wine Awards, which you can be a part of this Wednesday and Thursday, is my old buddy Ben Thomas, who I don't think I've ever... Oh, actually, I have had you on the program.
No.
I've never had you on.
Oh. It's my first time.
Oh, I've got a virgin in the studio. Woohoo! We won't go any further with that discussion at all. Guys, all in because there's something going on for each of you, and I'm probably going to start with wine because you have to go, Ben, off to the football.
I do indeed. I'm sorry about that.
Big rivalry between...
the Thomas family household.
Right.
They're Hawks and I'm a Tiger.
They're Hawks and you're a Tiger. Who's going to win?
Hopefully the Tigers.
Well, I thought you'd say that. Jeremy, your tip for the game?
Hawks by three.
Oh, a close one. Scotty, who do you back for?
I'm a Bomber.
Oh, God, we haven't got enough time to talk about all of that.
No,
who's going to win today?
Hawthorn by 7 or 8 goals. They're a very good outfit, Hawthorn. I think they could be the side to beat this year.
I'm on the Tigers by 15 points. They're going to be a surprise win today, and I think I've put them in my footy tips. Now, if you are interested in football tomorrow, don't forget that Joy will be presenting in conjunction with the AFL a broadcast from the Collingwood-Essendon game at the MCG. We will be on the concourse. Come and find us and say hello and let us know that you're a football fan and, of course, a Joy fan, not necessarily in that order. Come down, people. Ben, let's talk about the Federation Square Wine Awards. This is a culmination of a series of events that happen throughout the year. Is that correct?
Yeah, every couple of months, various wineries from different regions of Victoria come down to show off their wares, but they're not the big wineries. They're the small boutique producers, sort of, you know, usually family-owned kind of guys with interesting wines and usually a pretty good story to tell too.
So from my calculations, I think 30-something wineries?
Generally, yeah, about 100 wines and 30 wineries each couple of months.
And you have the pleasure of tasting those 100 wines and determining in no particular order who has the best of the bunch?
Well, throughout the year, a panel of judges chooses the best wines and puts them forward into the final.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't involved in that this year, but I judged a couple of weeks ago on the final day.
Yep.
We had 75 wines from 32 classes that we had to get through in a day.
75 wines in a day.
Sounds like Friday night, Scotty, doesn't it?
And look, I've got some of the wineries here. So there's a panel. Is there a panel of five of you that judge the final?
Yes.
So Ron Leslie, who sounds like could be a pianist. Yep. No, Ron Jeremy. Never mind. Victoria Sharples. Brett Snelson, who's Ainsworth and Snelson? What do they do?
They make wines from different parts of Australia under different labels, I think.
Okay. Your good self and the very fabulous Jane Faulkner. She'd lead you all astray, I'm assuming.
She actually kept us on the straight and narrow.
I find it very hard to believe. She's very good fun, Jane. And she's off judging a wine competition today. So how do you judge wine?
Well,
apart from, you know, putting it in your mouth, swirling, spitting, all of that sort of business, how do you actually determine one wine is better than another?
Well, you look for things like colour. You check to make sure that there aren't any faults with the wine.
Mm-hmm.
And there were actually a couple of wines that had a little bit of a fault to them. So
for Joe Public listening at home who's not got your knowledge or my knowledge or Scotty's knowledge or Jeremy's knowledge, let's look at it. Tell me about the colour. What could be bad about a white or a red, the colour?
Well, if a wine's got a sort of a brownish colour to it, it's probably overdeveloped and maybe not as fresh as it could be. So you're looking for a nice sort of, you know, vibrancy with the colour.
Clarity, nice and clear.
Yeah, nice and clear, but I don't mind so much if a wine's a little bit cloudy. I think it sort of gives them character. And then you're looking for flavour, aromas that not only smell and taste good, but they need to smell like they should. If it's a Pinot, you're looking for, you know, sort of raspberry, strawberry, cherry notes, and a little bit of vibrancy on the acid. And so we had to try 24 different classes of looking for different things in each of the wines.
That's a lot. Do you end up a little sort of over refreshed by the end of the day, or are you used to this?
Oh, you just kind of build up a resistance to it.
Does it make it difficult then when you decide you want to have a night on the tiles?
Oh, you spit the whole day. So there's absolutely... I rode my bike home sober as a judge.
Oh, I find that offensive almost. I went to a wine event last weekend. I hadn't been drinking all week. I had three tastings and I reckon I was plastered. It was a bad thing. Speaking of winning things, Jeremy, in 2011, the West Winds Gin took double gold medals at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition, and I believe you've just been back and done it again in 2013.
Yeah, we did. Considered the world's most revered spirit competition. I guess we showed the true Aussie spirit, a little bit of Australia too. Ben Lexon, you know, taking on the big boys.
How does one... Actually, let's come back and talk about judging gin. And also, Scott, we'll come back and talk about judging food because we do have to play a couple of brief messages and we might even have a track because I found a track that's suitable for each of you. So we might see if we can get one started.
Joy 94.9.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are. And that was Cheap Wine by Shane Nicholson. He is the other half of Casey Chambers and a very talented singer in his own right, a cover of the old 70s Cold Chisel track, Cheap Wine. And that was for you, Ben Thomas. Not that you've been drinking cheap wine. It's probably a little bit of irony in that song. We were talking just before my guest star, Ben Thomas. He's one of the judges at the Federation Square Wine Awards. He also writes for the Weekly Review here in Melbourne. He is their resident wine writer and has been forever since that existed.
Three and a half years.
Three and a half years. Jeremy is here from the West Winds Gin. We were talking just before we went to that track about competition and gin and that sort of thing. And also in the studio with me is Scott Pickett from St. Crispin, a new venture at 300 Smith Street in Collingwood. We'll come to that in just a moment. Jeremy, we're talking about judging gin. It's and I just had a bit of a listen to a conversation you boys were having off air while we were playing that track. Did I hear 60 gins produced in Australia?
I don't know if it's quite that many. There's a considerable amount that have to be 25, 30.
Because gin is traditionally, we would know it as a British thing.
A drink for old. I mean, the three words we got when we did some market research were depressed English grandmothers, often in that sentence.
Well, it was just the Queen Mother should be enough reference there, or the Good Betty herself. So this is produced out of the Margaret River.
Out of Margaret River, yep.
How did it come about?
We, three of us boys, three out of four, all grew up sort of chasing pretty girls and surfing and spending our summers sort of partaking all the wonderful lifetime experiences of Margaret's. I think a large percentage of your bottle is water. You've got to have a good water story. And what better place to sort of take you away to than Margaret River? We use the rainwater. It's the purest water we could find.
Yep.
Coming straight across the ocean there, apart from a couple of naughty French fishermen in the middle of the Indian. I don't think there's much pollution coming off there at all.
Is the name the West Winds because of those winds that come off over WA?
Yeah, look, the West Winds were the winds that brought the travellers out in search of the New World, the botanicals, the exotica, when England had a fixation on sugar 300 years ago. It sort of set about the world, along with the rest of colonising Europe, to discover all the new parts of the world. And I spent a period of time in the Spice Islands, the Dutch East Indies, which is now Indonesia, as a kid, which is famous for a lot of botanical spices. Scotty would use a lot of those sort of things. So that's a bit of a tip of the hat to the sailors of old, the explorers and those that braved the new world.
Now, we talked just before the break about 2011 San Francisco Spirit Awards. As you say, the holy grail for spirit producers. You'd had your first gin on the market for
4.5 weeks.
And you take double gold.
$1,350 was in the bank account. It cost us $1,425 to enter. I put that on my credit card, disappeared to Vietnam for a holiday, and copped a few phone calls from the boys.
That's an extraordinary story. And it's like training for the Olympics for a month and winning a gold medal.
There's a little bit of cool runnings about it.
Yeah, totally.
Gin from Australia, Jamaican bobsleds, you know.
Scott Pickett, you're used to competition.
Yes, Pete, I am.
Having been a chef at elite level, people would know you from The Point, as well as now the Estelle and St. Crispin. How did St. Crispin come about?
St. Crispin came about just through a casual conversation, really. I have a business partner, it's a chef there as well, Joe Grabeck.
Now, he's the former exec chef at the
Press
Club. Yeah,
he's been George's right-hand man for the last 3 or 4 years at the Press Club, and just finished up at Christmas. And, you know, Joe and I have been mates for a number of years now. We both had the privilege of working under Philip Howard at the Square in London. But we were there at different times. And, that's that sort of common synergy. So when Joe first got back to Australia about 2005, 2006, we caught up then and sort of met. And we've been good friends ever since. He lives just up the road from the Estelle. He's got a young family like myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're similar age guys. Actually, I think I'm about 6 months younger than Joe.
You'll make that very clear. Good work.
Yeah. And, he'd sort of finished at the Press Club, and obviously that's a massive role and a massive job, and he wanted to have some time with, he's got 4-year-old twins, beautiful girl and boy, and he sort of took the summer, and sort of March or April, we just caught up in the courtyard at the Estelle having a quiet beer and, you know, talking about life and what he's going to do next, just as sort of mates and chefs do, and one thing led to another, and we sort of just looked at each other and said, well, you know, what are you doing? Oh, not much. And what about you? Yeah, not much. You know, do you want to do a restaurant? Oh, yeah, all right. So
then I sort of... It makes it sound so simple.
Yeah, well, it sounds simple. Then I found the space the next day. I'd sort of been shopping around sort of in the back of my mind for 6 months, been looking for a sort of site or a venue. And, the former Cavaliero popped up, and, we went down the next day, did a walkthrough. Made a decision that night to, make them an offer, and 3 days later signed the contract and we're in. So, no mucking about.
Very quick. Well, things used to be slower in this industry, I'm sure. You created gin and a month later, barely being able to afford the entrance price, win one of the most prestigious awards in the world. You decide on a whim to open a restaurant with a bloke you've known for a few years over a beer.
Yeah.
Have you made this, any of these rash decisions, Ben Thomas?
No, but I think I might have to start.
Well, that, apparently they make money. We've got a message, and I'm happy to hear from you. 0427 Joy 949 is the number. You can send a text. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300 Joy 949. Heath is sitting on the desk, well, at the desk, I should say, eating his lunch, so he needs some entertainment from you if you want to ring, or you can send a tweet to cravings_joy949. That'll come straight into the studio, of course. And it gives us a chance to respond straight to your questions. Now, Ben says, speaking of meatballs, apropos of nothing, I should think, Ben, thank you for the recommendation to get a slow cooker. I made some delicious Moroccan meatballs the other day. Beautiful. See, we inspire people on this program. It's not just all fluff and nonsense after all.
Definitely not, Ben.
What's been the biggest challenge for and to all three of you in your very different industries? What's been the biggest challenge in longevity and making sure that you have success? You know, how do you stay in a job for 3.5 years as a wine writer, Ben? You know, how does this gin become successful? Do you put your knackers on the line? And Scott, you've been doing this for a long time. How do you stay successful? How do you stay fresh? Ben, I'll start with you.
Well, I think I'm in a different boat to the other two guys. I just tell people stories. And there are so many stories out there that I never have any trouble coming up with something to write about each week.
Can we get sick of wine stories? You know, this wine is lovely. It's got a lot of tannins.
No, it's not the wine. No, it's the people behind the wine.
Mm.
It's not, you know, what's in the bottle is important, but it's how it got there, I think, is more important. You know, the philosophies behind why people have chosen to get into the industry, because essentially they're farmers. You know, why do they focus on Pinot? What's the story behind that? You know, do they like the clones of the different Pinot grapes? What's their focus? What drives them? That's what I find interesting.
Whose is the most interesting story you've heard?
Oh, geez.
Think about
really
that.
Really put me on the spot, yeah.
Jeremy, what's been the recipe for success? Is it the four of you are all just slightly barking mad? I mean, what's the...
Oh, not slightly. Oh, the knackers are on the line. It's all about the balls today. Look, I think the three things that we'd put it down to are the people behind it, the regionality, and keeping the ATO at bay.
Which are horrible.
Well, I wouldn't go on air and speak too badly of the government department, but by Jesus, I'll take their pound of flesh.
Yes, they do. And Scott, for you, you've been, like I said, been doing this a long time. What's your secret? You keep remaining fresh. You keep opening new venues. You've always got new ideas. What's been the
I think I'm one of the lucky ones that, you know, I really like my job. I love my job, and it's not just, like, I'm not a 9-to-5er. I get up, I sort of, you know, trudge on the train. I sort of, you know, depress the fact that I'm going to work on a Monday morning. I still, even 25 years in the industry myself, I love getting out of bed and going to work and going and cooking and enjoying what I do and not taking it too seriously. You know, obviously, you know, you've got to be serious during service and make sure that things are cooked properly and that service is right and everything, but enjoy what you do. Do you know what I mean? I think restaurants should be fun. Food should be fun. You know, restaurants should be fun. And, you know, when you go out for dinner, you know, ultimately, you want to have a good time. Do you know what I mean? With good service, good food, good wine, and keep it, you know, do the basics well.
There you go. Very sage advice from the three of you. I want to come back and talk about something you've just mentioned and put in my head. It's 27 minutes past one here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. Gloomy Saturday afternoon. I'd love to hear from you. 0427 Joy 949. Send me an SMS or email onair@joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9.
G'day, I'm Pete Evans, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Really kills it.
Yes, you are on Cravings. 29 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. Ben, we've had a message from you from Dan Sims, who says stories about wine are much more important to tell than technical stats any day. And there's an invitation there we don't want to open. We were talking before about stories, and Scott, you raised something that I think piqued my interest. Scott Pickett is here, of course, from St. Crispin and the Estelle. Jeremy Spencer is here from the West Winds Gin, and Ben Thomas from the Weekly Review and one of the judges of the Federation Square Wine Awards. You mentioned about going out for dinner and sort of being out and looking at what your competitors are doing. And I guess the question again for each of you, are you ever not at work? If you're out for dinner at somebody else's restaurant, are you looking at their technique, the way they build a dish? Likewise, Jeremy, with gin and certainly Ben with you as a wine judge, are you ever able to go out and enjoy a bottle of wine when you don't want to say, you know, have a bit of a sniff and a swirl and a spit? I'll go with you, Scotty.
Look, I'm probably not as bad as I used to be these days. I try to switch off a little bit, but you're always looking, you know, for things that you know, you might have missed, or ways to improve, or little touches that you might think, gee, that's a really lovely touch. Like, you know, simple ones like the bar hooks underneath the bar. Do you know what I mean? All those little things. You know, you think of, you go, it's nice when you sit at a bar to hang your jacket off, or your wife to put a handbag somewhere. All those little things that I look at, you know, whether that be how a serviette's folded, or how the bathrooms are, or whether it's candles or lighting, I do take that all into perspective so that I can learn things. If I see anything I don't like, then I try just to discard it these days. It makes me feel, you know, comfortable about the decisions that we've made.
Ben, are you ever not at work?
Yes. If I go to a restaurant, I'm not at work. I tend to ask the sommelier just to sort me out with wines by the glass that match the food.
Mm-hmm.
So I often don't know what I'm going to get, and I let them take me on the ride. It's a great experience, and really, if you're not doing it, people should be.
And does that broaden your knowledge, do you think? Because I often do the same thing.
Sometimes I try not to think about the wine too much and just really enjoy the way it matches with the food and the challenge that I've kind of set for the sommelier. It's great.
That's how I discovered something called Grüner Veltliner, by a sommelier just throwing me a glass during dinner. At some point, I just went, oh, yeah, okay, this is good. Are you ever not at work? Are you always looking at what your competitors are doing? Or do you have enough competitors in the market here?
Oh, look, I think we could do with more. Mm-hmm. I think the movement of Aussie distillings, it's amazing at the moment. There's some lads in the Yarra Valley doing their thing with gin, set out to make a gin as well, which is great. They're doing some rounds. I think you're always at work to some degree. I think the third bottle of wine often helps.
We do encourage responsible drinking, and there's at least four people at that table. Another message from Dan. Enjoying the show, guys, talking about a few of my favourite things, gin, wine and food, and gin, lots of gin. Gin and tonic, Dan.
Get it in your mouth, Dan.
Song coming for you very shortly. The two gins you have, the Sabre and the Cutlass. The Sabre is a citrus...
Sabre is our entry-level gin. Mm-hmm. It's a London dry by definition, but we want to call it a gin of Margaret River. It's soft, it's citrus, it's easy, missionary position. And then there's the Cutlass. It's a little boy's pirate sword. We weren't going to be told to go to bed, put our BMXs away, or go and eat our greens. Somebody said you couldn't put tomato in gin. We gave them the forks, put tomato in the gin, won a couple of awards.
And this is bush tomato. So this
bush
is a
native
Kutra,
bush tomato. Yeah,
Kutra,
yeah, the indigenous tomato. Indigenous folk have been on it for a couple of hundred years, and we've only discovered it. A
couple of thousand, like yeah. About 40,000.
And we've only really discovered it in the last few years. So, we call it the Cutlass. It's naughty. It's about challenging the norm, stepping outside your comfort zone, and it's made a nice little savoury style gin.
And a fair swag of alcohol in it as well.
50%.
Good for a gin.
Look, it changes the dynamic in your gin and tonic.
Mm.
You know?
Should you have it with tonic? What would you put in the Cutlass?
I think you could have either with tonic. Mm. I think garnish the Sabre with lemons. Back in the day, there weren't a whole lot of limes doing the rounds in London when we had the gin craze. And we recommend anything savoury for your Cutlass and tonic. So I like green capsicum.
Yeah, slice of green capsicum.
Mr. Chan, he loves celery in there. I encourage cherry tomatoes. I encourage a plate of different sort of stuff. Carrot, why not heirloom carrots, something cool.
In the gin.
Absolutely. Who'd have thought? Savoury gin.
Going out on a limb being a little strange. No, I think it's a great idea. I was first introduced to your gin by Matt Wilkinson, who should be a brand ambassador for you, just as a hint.
He's all right. Kid can cook.
He can cook, but he can also drink. And it was him that put me onto it. It was at some event that we were at, and he said, oh, come and have a gin. And he told me that it had bush tomatoes, and he was serving it with just a slice of green capsicum in it. And it completely changed my impression of gin.
Well, look, these two guys would tell you next to me, Ben, how long have we been ignoring savoury wines from Europe? Now we've made a bit of a movement on it over here, and Australians have finally kicked on to the fact that you have a great meal, there's no need to have a massive Shiraz or a cab with it. Why not have some of the savoury European style wines? And I think that's what we're trying to encourage with the Cutlass. You know, complement your food, not try and fight your food.
And it would go well with so many different dishes, I guess.
Yeah, dirty martinis, gin and tonic, red snappers, you name it. You've got two hands, two drinks.
Yes, exactly. I like that you've got two hands, two drinks. Ben, you've got to run away shortly, so let's talk briefly about these awards. They are Wednesday and Thursday. Can the public come along and be a part of it?
The public can and are required to come along.
Required to come along.
Absolutely, yeah. From 4:30 to 8:30 on Wednesday and Thursday night in the atrium at Fed Square.
Yep. And this is the announcement of the winner. So you've done all the tasting.
Yep.
You've dotted your I's, you've crossed your T's, you've got your grey lead out and made sure that everything's kosher.
Yep, and the awards kick off at 6 o'clock Wednesday night.
And will people be able to taste wines from all of those?
They'll all be there, all pouring and all telling their stories.
Now, speaking of stories, we were talking about the most interesting story you've come across. You've delved into your little black book of research, and you've come up with, I'm very pleased you've come up with this response, from just outside of Ballarat, is a beautiful little cold climate winery called Eastern Peak. Tell us that story.
That's it. Well, Norm Latter set that up a long time ago. His son Owen had always been helping out in the vineyard. His dad has motor neurone disease, I believe. So Owen had always, as he said, been the muscle around the place. But in 99, when Owen was in year 10, his dad was walking in the backwards in the winery, fell over a hose and bumped his head and lost all sense of smell. So Owen had to make the wines. He was 15.
15
three years
old.
Away from being legally allowed to taste what he was doing. Pissed his teachers off because he'd be turning up covered in grape skins and smelling of wine to school every day. And he hasn't stopped.
And he's, I know Owen, he's an incredible winemaker. His palate is extraordinary. I was up there for a thing last year and he pulled some of this Pinot off a stainless steel vat that probably had about six months to go. And I could have drank it there and then. He's just a very, very clever young man. He's probably, what, is he now 20?
28.
28. He's a consulting winemaker for a number of wineries. He's still making wine for Eastern Peak and he's got his own label. And at 28 years of age, he's an incredible young man. I'm glad you found that as a story. I'm going to let you get on your bike and get to the football because it's a very important day for you. Go the Tigers. Thanks for coming in. And again, 6:30 Wednesday and Thursday.
Yep, the awards are Wednesday night.
So the awards are Wednesday night and people can go on Thursday night. Have a look at some of the 100-odd wines from 30-odd winemakers, all Victorian, and discover something that is from your own backyard. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you in, mate. Scotty and Jez, we're going to come back very shortly and talk some more about St. Crispin and talk about gin, but I've got a song for you, Jeremy. This is from a mob. They're called the Heavenly States. It's from 2004, and it is called Gin and Tonic.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Guy Grossi, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
It's 18 minutes to 2 here on New North Gay Station in the Nation, Joy 94.9. Don't forget to head down to the MCG tomorrow on the concourse. Joy will be broadcasting from there in conjunction with the AFL for the Collingwood Essendon match. Maybe you need to come and become a pink magpie or at least a pink bomber for however long they'll be. With some messages, one for you, Jeremy. Two hands, two drinks, but only one mouth. You mentioned two hands, two drinks. But if you're having a dirty dry martini and you're having a gin something, that you can actually do both and complement one another, I should think.
One mouth, but doesn't size matter?
Oh, you're in the right place to ask. And we have another one now. I'm thirsty. Gin and tonic, please. I'm sure it's happy hour in New Zealand. Look, it's, what did you say, 5 o'clock somewhere?
It's always
in the world.
5 o'clock in the world somewhere.
Exactly, which means we can have a drink. Scott, let's talk through the philosophy behind St. Crispin. From my knowledge, St. Crispin was a patron saint of workers, leather workers.
Yeah, cobblers and cobblers. Shoemakers, bootmakers, yeah. So when we were thinking about the name of the new restaurant, we sort of wanted to look into the history of the building, and Smith Street is one of the oldest streets in Melbourne, actually, in the sort of late and mid, in the mid and late 1800s. It was Chapel Street and Smith Street were the two sort of iconic shopping strips in Melbourne before the CBD really flourished and took off. So then we started looking through the history of the building and we went to the Collingwood Library and we found out that the first tenant in, I think it was about 1857, was a guy by the name of Mr. Boots, and he was a bootmaker and that was his name. So we were almost going to call it Boots or, you know, Thomas Boots it was, and he was a bootmaker and a shoemaker. So, you know, Tommy Boots sounded a little bit too sort of a bit like sort of Rockwell and Sons or a bit sort of, you know, American diner slider sort of foods. Then we thought, well, let's, you know, try to embrace, you know, the history of the building. For about 100 years, it was a cobbler's and it was a bootmaker's and it was a shoemaker. So then we looked into it and St. Crispin is the patron saint of cobblers and shoemakers.
Oh, look, it's kismet, isn't it? It's fate.
Yeah, kismet, yeah. Well, there's also a food synergy that goes in with it. There's a Shakespearean play that's written about St. Crispin and St. Crispian. There's actually twin brothers. So that sort of represents myself and Joe. And he talks about the St. Crispin Day banquet and feast, which is the 25th of October. So, you know, looking forward to having a special night and sort of celebrating the two saints, you know.
That would be brilliant. Now, they were preachers by day and shoemakers by night.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Interesting stories, and that sort of goes with what Ben was talking about before. He's had to leave us to go to the footy, but about telling stories about what it is that you do. It's not just putting food on a plate or gin in a glass. It's about being able to tell a story. You're telling a story, Jeremy, of the four guys that have put this together, that you're willing to take risks and you like to have fun. This is the Margaret River in a glass. That's not a wine, so for anyone who can't drink wine, this is the perfect Margaret River beverage. And the perfect thing to drink in winter. And it's the same when you're putting food on a plate, Scotty. It's not just putting food on a plate. It's telling a story.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think the story is important, and you know, people want to know about the story these days. You know, there's a couple of, you know, not that I necessarily agree with it, but a lot of people say it's all about the sizzle and not about the sausage these days. But look, I think it's important that you've got to have both. You've got to have the product and the story. Yeah, but a lot of people are getting away with just having good stories.
Well, without the product, you can't tell the story properly, can you, Jeremy?
I think you're right there. I like the storytelling. I think Scotty's on the money, but I like the storytelling. I think the original records of mankind history was all about storytelling originally. Mm. So it is, people like a tale, but tale could be anything it wants. If you know, if the shit in the bottle is no good, if the juice is no good, then put it down.
Mm, exactly. Don't drink it. And if you won't drink it, don't cook with it either, which is another thing. The menu is an interesting situation. You've gone with a minimum of two courses or three or a chef's tasting menu, which I think is the smartest idea for anybody. Trust a chef. They do this every day and they're good at it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And look, the chef's tasting menu changes every table and you know, every day, pretty much similar to the Estelle. But we didn't want to do exactly what the Estelle, which is 5, 7, or 9 course tasting menus. Mm-hmm. No choice, just let us cook. We wanted you to have a little bit of choice in this one. And I suppose, you know, the 2 or 3 course option is still only a small, you know, a small place. We seat about 40 seats and about 10 bar stools. And if you, you know, unfortunately, there's an economic side to a business that if people are just coming in and having a main course and a glass of wine, then, you know, we won't be there in 6 or 12 months because we can't pay the bills. So we did need to sort of lock something in again, you know, similar to the Estelle. And, you know, the 2 or 3 course option really suits. So I suppose St. Crispin sort of, it's for all the Estelle fans out there and sort of everyone in Collingwood and Fairfield and Northcote that, you know, doesn't want to have 7 or sort of 9 courses for dinner. They just want to have a couple and you know, drop in on a Wednesday night. And that seems to be working, you know.
And it's at 2 courses and, you know, you are, let's say we do 2 courses and a couple of glasses of wine because we're driving or it is Wednesday night. It's very easily affordable to do.
Yeah, it is. I think the price point and accessibility and affordability these days is something that's, you know, that the consumer's very aware of. Everyone's got, you know, bills to pay and, you know, things are getting more expensive and the kids and life and taxes and everything's just, you know, you don't always want to go out for $300-$400 like a head dinner. So 2 courses at St. Crispin's is 50 and 3 courses are 60, you know, and the wines are by the glass between $8 and $20, depending on what you want to spend, which is where it's at, you know.
And you can walk away feeding 2 of you for $100, which is reasonable.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're talking about fine dining and that $400 a meal for 2 of you, it's becoming rarer and rarer. And we're seeing around the country restaurants at the top end are starting to...
Well, it's happened in Sydney in the last 12, 18 months, really. Most of the top end places have moved away.
Claude's now is closing. Yeah. You know, we saw what Justin North went through with his venues.
Yeah, Bacassel went through the hoop. You know, Peer changed focus, really. Peter Doyle moved away from the Three Hats and returned them. You know, there's been a lot, you know... Yeah, Sydney's taken a big hit in top-end dining, and there will always be a place for that. I don't think that, you know, quality needs to also, you know, reflect the price point as well. You can still do good food at a good price point.
Of course you can.
And that's time and love and labour.
But we're always going to need to have a town with an Attica and a Vieux du Monde and a Jacques Raymond.
And that doesn't mean that's, you know, part of my dream or my plan might not be to do one in 5 or 10 years' time. But, you know, for me right now, we're around in an economic sense and where I'm at sort of, you know, cooking sense, this is what we're doing.
It's a very smart thing you are doing. And look, I've had a bit of a read through the menu and there's a whole bunch. I could be there 3 times in a week and not be bored by this. So there's good diversity in there as well. How important is the fact that you've got some of this produce at your doorstep?
Look, I think that's, you know, good produce is obviously paramount and we try to keep things, for me, as simple as we can and let that sort of shine through. And it's funny, Joe and I were sitting down talking about changing, you know, the menu. We're only 6 weeks old, changing, you know, a few dishes because we're short and sharp, 4 entrees, 4 mains, 4 desserts and do 12 dishes really well. But as we're starting to get a little bit of traction and a few reviews now and a little bit of media, we're like, well, yeah, do we change it? Because people might actually come in and they've read about a dish and they want to have it. So are we changing it for ourselves or are we changing it, you know, just because it sort of needs to be done. So,
but isn't that part of continuing the evolution of what you do? Isn't that part of, and Jeremy, jump in here, I'm sure that there's another gin that you guys are working on that has another botanical flavour. Isn't that part of what we do? If we get to a point and we say, look, the customer might always want this, so let's leave it, nothing ever changes?
No. Look, you're exactly right. So what we decided to do last night was, we're in the first week of August, we're going to let it run for another 2 weeks, and then we're going to make some sort of minor changes and bring everything in over a 2 to 3 week period over there. So we get to the end of winter, spring starts, and anybody that wants to read and anybody that wants to eat anything that they've been reading about sort of recently can have it. And then we'll just evolve and keep growing, definitely.
Jeremy, what's next for... You've got the Sabre and the Cutlets. What's coming next, or are we not allowed to talk about that yet?
We are indeed. We like to have a little bit of fun. We're not saving kids' lives or putting out house fires or rescuing puppies. We like to have a little bit of fun and ass around a bit. So we did a limited edition of the Sabre in a 1.5-litre bottle.
Yep.
I always used to like drinking Tanqueray Export. I think it's middle of the road, exactly where gin should be. So we took the Sabre up to 44%.
Yep.
1.5-litre bottle, Magnum, Dirty Harry, the 44 Magnum.
Magnificent.
This year we're in discussions with some people from Movember. We're looking to do the King of Hearts. He was the only one of the four playing card kings not to have a moustache. Yep. Crazy King Charlie. So we're going to take the Sabre up to 52%.
Yep.
Drop it in a bottle. Got some cool little artwork. The King of Hearts, Movember, and we'll just give all the profits to the boys if they're happy to be associated with a naughty little gin.
That's a very good thing.
And if Channy can pull his finger out, we will possibly do the Musket, which was an old school gun. We want to do a gin liqueur. So we're thinking of maybe infusing with Australian...
How do you do a gin liqueur?
Well, we're going to drop it down to 30,
yep.
Sweeten it up with a little more wattle seed, and infuse it with some Australian native tobacco.
Ooh, sounds interesting. Oh, you can
have, but it's sourcing the tobacco is attention. The... Yeah, sourcing the tobacco is the interesting thing. There's some legalities.
Why wattle seed?
Wattle seed adds a texture and a mouthfeel. It sweetens it and softens it up without adding glycerins, glycerols, saccharins, any sort of fake sugars washed up bartenders would get found out pretty quickly if we went and popped those in there to make it palatable.
So this is another native ingredient, the wattle seed is.
Yep. It's also used. Wattle seed we use heavily in the Sabre, but we'll sweeten it right up for the gin liqueur. And if we can get hold of the tobacco, because there's some legalities around Australian tobacco.
that it's ridiculously expensive.
It can only be picked by somebody of Indigenous background in Victoria if it's legal.
Okay.
Yeah, we're looking into
it. I need to put you in touch with somebody who might be able to fix that for you fairly quickly. Brilliant. Very, very quickly. Guys, we've got about a minute and a half to go, so this is the time for the plug. So if people want to find St. Crispin's, first of all, you're at 300 Smith Street in Collingwood.
That's right, Pete, yeah.
They'll find you on the internets, on the interwebs.
Yep, Twitter, St. Crispin Smith, website's being built as we speak, but there's a holding page, and info@stcrispin.com.au. We're open Wednesday to Sunday for dinner, Friday, Saturday, Sunday lunches.
Beautiful. Mate, I'm sure it will be successful. Estelle has been for you and for Risey, and you have a lot of respect in this town for what you do, so I'm sure this will just be another feather in your cap.
Cheers, thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
5 years' time, you're opening a fine diner because the economic climate has changed. Jeremy, people can find you guys on the web at...
You can find it. Just pop into the Google machine, the West Winds Gin. There'll be a picture of myself and the big Kiwanese fellow there. Drink local, think global. Melbourne Wine Store, 7 days a week, or go to the Estelle or St. Crispin's and you can have a lovely gin and tonic with the boys and let them do the cooking for you.
I love this cross-pollination and promotion. On a station that's not supposed to do it, I do. Look, if John Fain can do it, they're on a station that's not supposed to do it either. We can allow a little plug at the end of each interview. I will be back next week, and we'll have no doubt another plate full of food and beverage to take us through the hour. Coming up very shortly, Mark and Joe from the Escape Pod will take you travelling. Lord knows where you'll end up today, but no doubt another interesting program with interesting stories. And then from 3 o'clock, the boys are in to talk cars on Fender Bender. Do have a lovely weekend, and go those Kangaroos. Was there a bit of a game of football this weekend? I don't think so.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.